My name is Levi Phillips, and I live here at 831 Main Street in Charleston, on Charleston's west side, which used to be, I guess, 30, 40 years ago, a very good part of the city. And like most of the inner cities, the neighborhood has changed. It's not considered a high-class neighborhood anymore. I guess you consider it middle class.
How long have you lived in the neighborhood?
We've lived here, 37? How old were you? 37 years.
There's so many places to start, but let's just, tell me about your earliest memory with a basketball.
Well, just like it says in that article that she is reading, I've started playing basketball. Should I tell him the whole story, Justin?
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
When I was a kid, I had a lisp. You can still hear it from time to time. And I stuttered. So when everybody else was going to play, I was 5, 6 years old. When everybody else was going to play on the playgrounds, I played by myself because it was embarrassing because people couldn't understand me when I talked. So that's when I started playing basketball, and I fell in love with it.
Tell me about, so you would play by yourself. You'd shoot hoops, you'd dribble, you just kind of, it was just you and the ball.
Everything alone. Just me and a basketball for years.
When did you start playing on teams?
When I got to junior high, there was a teacher. Her name was Lisa Hicks, and she was a speech pathologist. So she taught me to speak out of the back of my throat, and I became more social then. And that's when I started playing. Junior high is when I started playing on teams.
It must have been kind of a new lease on life for you to have a speech therapist and be more confident socially and end up getting to play ball. I mean, talk about how you grew as a person at that point.
Well, I became more social. I got to go to the places where the other kids were going, like they'd have parties and my son owns a company called Fun and Fitness, where he teaches kids how to have fun and how to stay in shape. They have the bouncing things, they have the running things and all that. Well, I got to do some of that type of stuff when I got to junior high, when I could be around people.
Talk to me about... Just walk me through the chapters of your basketball career between, middle school and... Is that yours or mine?
Yes, me. I'm sorry.
Is there any way to put it on vibrate?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Sorry about that. So you played in middle school. You played in high school, too, I presume?
In middle school, I played on a team that I think only... We played 18 to 20 games, and we only won 2 games when I was in junior high. It wasn't middle school then. Then I got to high school, and I was fortunate to play against, first of all, I want to tell you, my son who's sitting over there was a star. When he got in the 8th grade, he became a star on his basketball team. I never was a star. I got to high school, and I played with 2 people that went to WVU, West Virginia University, with me. They actually signed there before I did, and it was easy in high school. We won 48. We won 48 games in a row, which is still a West Virginia record. But I can't take much credit for that because, like I said, I had 2 players on the team who were just great, and I was average. But if you're playing with great guys, you always look better. So I did. I looked better, and I got some scholarship offers. I was telling my son last night, I wanted to go to Maryland, but by that time I had gotten some confidence, and Maryland had a coach named Lefty Driesell, Hall of Fame coach, and he told me that when I went up there to Maryland to my visit, he told me, he said, why would you go to West Virginia? You're going to sit on the bench for 3 years before you get to play. You got two All-American guards in front of you. Of course, just like I told my son, that pretty much ended my conversations with him, telling me that I was going to sit on the bench. I'd gained some confidence by then. But we had a good career. We had good teams at West Virginia. And the two players that were in front of me, one got hurt and one got killed in a car wreck. Things like that happen.
What was your position?
I was a point guard. In high school, I was a forward.
Talk to me about what happened with your basketball career after college.
Well, after college, I got drafted by the Baltimore Bullets in like the seventh round. I think they only have two rounds now. But I got drafted in the seventh round. So I went up there and sat on the bench for, I don't know, 3 months, and I wasn't getting to play very much. I was like the 12th guy. I got a check every 2 weeks, so I like that. But I basically sit on the bench, and people talk about me being a professional basketball player. I was a professional bench setter. They traded me to the 76ers, Philadelphia 76ers. I think they got two eggs and a steak sandwich for me. But so I got to, for a couple of years, I got to sit on their bench. And it wasn't two straight years. They cut me also. And so I went back to Germany. But by the time I got there, my agent said, hey, the 76ers want to give you a 10-day contract. I didn't mention that when I first left college, after I got cut by the Bullets, I went over to Germany and played a year. But anyway, I came back for some 10-day contracts, and then I signed a little longer contract, and I sat on the bench. I was a decent practice player.
What year did you get signed to the Baltimore Bullets?
1974, I believe it is. It's been almost 50 years, so I may be a little inaccurate. My son tells me all the time I'm inaccurate, but it was around 74.
And then it was, you say it was a couple years later, or just a couple months later, that you went then to the 76ers.
Correct. That is correct.
1974, 76ers. Talk to me about some players that may be familiar names that you shared, or in the Bullets as well. Talk about some of the players that you spent time with, interacted with, shared that chapter of history with.
Our star with the Bullets was a guy named Wes Unsell, who I think is in a Hall of Fame. And Earl Monroe came as I was leaving, so I didn't get to spend much time with him. And I think he's in the Hall of Fame also. Then they traded me to the 76ers, and the 76ers at that time had a guy named Julius Irving, and who the world knows as Dr. J. They had a guy by the name of Duck Collins, who made his bones being the coach for Michael Jordan, for the Chicago Bulls. And one of the most entertaining people was a guy named Lloyd Free. He changed his name. He's one of the first NBA players. I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was Lew Alcindor. He changed his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But we had a guy by the name of Lloyd Free, and he changed his name to World B. He became World B Free.
Tell me, I'm going to talk to your son in a minute, but tell me, and I sense that you're being humble about some things.
Well,
and I'm going to let him clarify
about this. My son, we have three different generations of basketball players. 2 years ago, my grandson won the state championship in West Virginia.
50 years to the day.
Yeah. 50 years later, my grandson won. In this area, there's a lot of controversy about the Phillips boys. Younger people say that my grandson is the best of us. The middle-aged people say my son was the best. My son was certainly the best scorer. I think he averaged 28, 27, something like that. I averaged 16. But the older people, the senior citizens, they say I was the best of the Phillips boys. So it's pretty interesting that as I watch this, to watch everything that he did when he was in high school and college, and now my joy is watching my grandson play. We saw him play last night, and we were just absolutely proud. He played well, and so that's the basketball situation for the Phillips family.
All right, I'm going to pause our interview, and I'm going to come and have a few clarifying words with you. So let me invite you to say your name and tell me your relationship here.
My name is Justin Phillips, and I am the son of Levi Phillips.
Now you've probably heard him speak about his career, and he speaks about it very humbly. He refers to himself as a professional bench sitter. Let me just have you sort of give a little bit of context of this man's skill level, what he's accomplished.
Well, I'll start with a couple things that stick out in his career. Is he's the ultimate winner. High school, like he said, they lost maybe one, two games over a 3 year period, two state championships. Then as he went on to college, he's infamously known for making the first basket of the new West Virginia Coliseum. So that's one thing that I think is wonderful. He'll never live that down. And then the next thing is his group of guys at WVU was the first all-black integrated team in NCAA Division I men's basketball. So I just think that was a huge milestone. He doesn't understand how big that is, but us guys under him, we do. I mean, it was a huge thing. So those are some of the things that I highlight when I look at his career and the things he did. Now, I didn't get to see him. I've seen films. I didn't get to see him personally with my own eyes. What I've heard from guys that he's played with and his former players and coaches and friends, that he could do it all. They said there wasn't a thing Levi Phillips couldn't do on the basketball court. And he was a guy that they said, well, it looks like he's not playing hard. He's just gliding around the court. And then the game's over and he has a triple-double. And, so that's just the type of player that, everyone tells me he was. And that's what I've seen on film as well.
He seems pathologically modest. He calls himself a bench warmer. That doesn't sound. It doesn't sound like you can score a triple double and be a bench warmer.
Absolutely, they say he was an all around basketball player. He's right. I don't think his strong suit was scoring, but he could score if he had to. And again, they said he was one of the best defenders that they had. And obviously, he was before his time. He's 6'4". Playing point guard in the 70s, which is, that's really big. Nowadays you got 6'7" point guards and all this, but then not so much so. So he was really ahead of his time in a lot of basketball, not only in culturally, but on the court as well. He was well ahead of his time.
Let me ask you, if I may, how old are you right now? What's your age?
I am 68 as of last week.
And let me ask you, how old are you?
I will be 40 in a few months.
Tell me about your childhood. What it was growing up, what it was like growing up as Levi's son. What your earliest memories are of basketball?
Wow, I'll tell you, it was a gift and a curse. The gift is obviously, you know, I was athletically inclined. You know, the hard part was, I didn't even have a name until I was 12 years old. I was Little Levi, and that was my thing. And it fueled me, actually. I wanted to show people, like, I'm Justin. I am somebody. But it took a while. It took about 12 years for people to say, okay, he's Justin. He's not Little Levi. So, you know, in that spectrum, it was a lot of pressure as well, which my son, his grandson, feels, you know, you come on the court, and they say, you know, you introduce yourself. My name's Justin Phillips. And they say, do you know Levi Phillips? And you say, well, that's my father. And they say, oh, well, he's got to be the best player. So it was always tough, but it was good, and it motivated us to try to live up to his huge shadow, you know, which, you know, it was very tough. But, you know, I just think that was the gift and the curse, you know. And he always gave us great sound advice, and, you know, he's taught me so much. Training, and I went on, like he was telling you, I have Fun Fitness Kids Clubs now, and we do some training. It's so many things that he showed me that I've passed on through the generations that never get old. There's a training regimen that he invented and created, and it's called the All State. And what he tells kids now, he said, if you get this move down, I guarantee you'll make All State. And he's 100%. Every kid that's mastered the training regimen that he's put, which he named the All State, they've all been All State.
We've talked a lot about. You have something you want to add to that? Go ahead.
Including him.
Yeah. Proof positive. So we've talked a lot about basketball, and obviously your dad taught you a lot about the game. Let me just give you a chance to talk about him as a dad, and just sort of what some of the most important lessons are you learned about life from him. Things that he. Points he wanted to make sure you understood about life and just what you've learned from his example.
Well, I learned more from his example. My dad is one of the most humble guys that I've ever met. I mean, you know, he won't tell you anything about, you know, all the incredible things that he's done. You know, I hear all this stuff from his friends and his coaches and his teammates. You know, they've told me all these things. He's very humble. And he also showed, you know, so he taught me humility, you know. You let your actions speak for you, you know, so, and that's one of the things, and he's always been just a caring and an overgiver, you know, he gives and gives and gives and gives, you know, and that's just his thing, and he's always been like that, you know, in our neighborhood as I was growing up, you know, all the kids would come, and he'd teach them basketball and take them to the pool, and he's been doing this for as long as I can remember, so he's just a real community guy. You know, the lowest of the low people love him, the highest of the high people love him, and he's just a people's person. And he's always, you know, been a pillar in our community. And he, you know, he just does anything he can for anyone. And that's probably the biggest thing that I've taken off of him. And I try to follow in his footsteps in that regard.
So it sounds like, if I'm doing the math right. You guys moved to this neighborhood when you were a very young boy.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Tell me what. Talk to me about this neck of the woods in Charleston. This neighborhood, this part of town. What's unique about it? What's special about it? What's challenging about it? What it was like to grow up here, and maybe sort of then versus now. I mean, you've been here a long time.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when we first moved to this area, it was. A good area, you know, a good area to raise families in. And this was mid-80s. I think by the end of the late 80s, we had pretty much of a drug epidemic or a drug problem around this area. My dad, obviously, he was working in state government at the time. He could have easily took us and moved out. He chose not to. He chose to stay here and help people. And it goes back to what I was saying, you know, so he'd have all the kids, you know. You know, some kids wouldn't have fathers or wouldn't have rides. And he was just like everybody's dad, you know. And even to this day, you know, if kids need something, they come by. He gives them money. He gives them a ride. He gives them advice, you know. And I think that was important for people like him to stay in this community. And now as we move forward and it's, you know, 20, 30 years later, I see the community's really kind of turning around. They're revitalizing things. We have a lot of things for youth. You know, we have basketball leagues. We have foundations. And so I think he's very important. People, him and people like him are very important in the growth of this area, which was at one point, you know, a pretty rough area in this city, probably the roughest. And I think and I attribute it to him and other leaders in our community for the major turnaround that's happening.
So I'm going to give you a chance, Mr. Levi, to brag on your son a little bit. Talk to me about what makes you most proud of him as an athlete, and what makes you most proud of him as your son?
Well, I am so glad you asked me that question, because he talks about me being humble. My son, when he was in the seventh grade, and he's right, he had to follow in my footsteps. But there was a coach when he was in junior high. Was it middle school then or junior high?
It was junior high.
His coach cut him from the team, just like Michael Jordan got cut. He got cut from the team. And he ended up, and I think it fueled his fire, because of the Phillips family. I had a little brother who was All-State also, so we've got a hold on that All-State thing, but he cut him from the team, and 3-4 years later, he was probably the best player in the state. He averaged 28 points. He led his team to within an inch of winning it all, and he's talking about what the community meant to me. But if you have 35 to 40 year olds in this area, he's the one they talk about. They don't talk about Levi Phillips. They talk about Justin Phillips. And he mentioned that I try to help kids, and I have a tender heart with regard to all these. In our black community, what we miss more than anything is black dads. Kids have, well, he right now is training a kid that may be Randy Moss. I don't know, but that he does all that, and since he's smarter than me, he does it better than me. You talk about the things that I'm most proud of. I'm most proud of how he has handled having his children and all the things that he do for them, while maintaining enough time to help other kids. I am most proud of how he has turned out as a individual. And you can say that I take some of the credit for it. Very little. Justin is a successful person. I live here in the same community that he grew up in, while he lives up on what is called South Hills. You know, a big old house, so I'm proud of his success as a person. I was proud of his success as a basketball player, because all through high school and through college, he wasn't like me. He was the leading scorer. He was the guy that in the locker room before the game started, they said, "Now, what are we going to do about Justin Phillips? What are we going to do about him?" You know, I never had that type of pressure on me. I played with a guy at West Virginia who was an All-American. I played in high school with a guy who was wasn't McDonald's. It's called what? Parade All-American. So I never had a coach throughout my career say, "Hey, we got to stop that Levi." That never happened. But his situation was different. Every time they played, those coaches said, "Hey, you're going to be on Justin, and you're going to help." And I got to tell you, I live vicariously through him and my grandson. You came on a day when I am very happy. My grandson plays at a college down the southern part of West Virginia, and we went to watch him play last night, and I was so proud. Prouder than anything that I've ever done on a basketball court, and made me so happy. So that's what Justin has done. And you see, we have his picture up there. And if you look back there in the other room.
Oh, cool, yeah.
There's not a picture of me playing basketball. That's my grandson. And I have pictures of my son and my grandson dominate this house as far as photographs.
Two quick questions for you, and then I'm going to let Emily ask some questions. It sounds like, tell me the story from your memory and your perspective of that that moment when you got cut from the team. That sounds like a moment where you were at a crossroads.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and it goes back to what we were saying. It was the expectations of being Levi Phillips' son. I believe if my name was John Smith, or I wouldn't Levi Phillips' son, I don't believe the bar would have been set so high for me. I think they knew I was Levi Phillips' son, and they expected a whole bunch. And I just wasn't, you know, I wasn't physically ready at the time. And so, you know, and the coach was a good guy, and he's still a friend to this day. But what he pulled me to the side, and he said, "I know your dad was a star." He said, "But maybe this isn't for you." And you know, so I'm off of the team. And like he said, it fueled my fire. And then, you know, the long story short, 3 years later, I run into him, and he said, "You are the best player in the state." You know, and I was like, and I wanted to say, you know, "I told you so." I wanted to tell you that then. But again, I could hear my dad ringing in my mind and said, we lead by our actions, not by the things we say. So I just said, you know, "Thanks, coach." And I kept moving. So that, you know, that's what I took from that. And also, too, when that happened, you know, I was at a crossroads. I wanted to give up. And he, you know what he told me? He said, "Oh, we're Phillipses. We don't quit." He said, "What we're going to do is we're going to work even harder." So, you know, for the next, 3 or 4 years, every night. I mean, not some nights. I mean, every night. And this guy worked. You know, he worked hard for us, for his family. He works a full day. And he said, "Come on, son, we're going to the gym." You know, and I attribute that to, you know, that coach coming back 3 years later saying, "You are the best player in the state." You know, and it's simply because my dad took the time to mold me into that to that player. And I would like to go back and say one thing. You asked me, what do I take from him and his example? If I could sum it up in one sentence, I would say, Levi Phillips has led a life of service to others. And that would be the biggest takeaway that I would take away from my father.
Last thing for me. You guys were talking about this accomplishment of Levi's grandson, your son,
yes,
on the 50th anniversary of his accomplishment.
Yes.
You were both kind of saying it, and the mic was kind of going back and forth. Let me just have you tell that story. It sounds like your son gave his granddad a very special moment recently. Yeah? Let me just have you tell that story.
I'll start from the beginning. 1969, the Charleston High Mountain Lions, I believe undefeated state championship, arguably the best team to ever come out of this state, you know. So, you know, we fast forward, you know, to 2019, 50 years later, to the day my son's playing. It's his senior year. He starts the season off. He's averaging 28 points a game, breaks his hand. Third game of the season, sits out 8 games. You know, the team's in disarray. We lose three or four games. Nobody's really, we're looking like the dark horse. This is my son's team in 2019. We're looking like the dark horse. He comes back. It was a 6-week injury. He came back in 3 weeks, put a cast on his hand, came back to the court, led us to a state championship, won it on the day, 50 years to the day, that my father won his championship. I mean, it was spectacular. It was something to see.
What do you remember about that day?
The day that he won? I cried. That's what I remember most. I cried. I mean, I'm just so proud. I'm just so proud of what he has accomplished. And Justin didn't tell the whole story. He broke his hand when he was a junior. He broke his hand when he was a junior. His left hand, his non-shooting hand, as a senior, he broke his hand, his shooting hand, his right hand, and then he won the state championship and was the most valuable player of the state tournament. So, yeah, I was proud, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. I cried like a baby. It was a very, very special moment for me.
All right.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I want to show you a picture of one of my friends. Oh. See if you know who that is.
Well, I don't have my glasses on. Who is this? Who, tell me what we're looking at here.
We're looking at that's me, and that's a friend of mine.
And his name is?
He's a logo.
They call him Zeke from Cabin Creek. His name is Jerry West. He's the logo. He, you know, when they have NBA games, they have that guy.
Oh, yeah.
And Jerry West.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's got a cool little chapter of history.
He's a good guy, halfway crazy.
Okay, so I have a lot of questions, but I live here, so I might just have to interview you more later. But when I first saw you, you were at Reverend Watts Church talking about the history of the Triangle District mm-hmm. and how it was displaced through urban renewal, the interstate, and the water company. Could you talk about your family's history in that neighborhood?
I grew up in a project, public housing, they call it. And when I grew up, half of that public housing complex was for blacks, half was for whites. So as a matter of fact, we call it the black side. Actually, we called the Negro side and the white side. So he was asking me when I started basketball, when I got to junior high, urban renewal had changed things. For 2 years, I walked past a junior high school, John Adams Junior High, to go to Thomas Jefferson Junior High, which was a mile and a half further down the road. But the rich area of this town is called South Hills, where he lives. They divided that hill, and they made half the hill go to John Adams, like they were doing, and then half of them went to Thomas Jefferson, which was a predominantly, predominantly a black school. So during that time, the 1966, that happened, and I was in the ninth grade. I think it was a great thing for the founders of, I can't remember who the mayor was, and I didn't know some of the people. I was just a 13-year-old ninth grader, 14 maybe. But anyway, I got to meet white people for the first time. And I'm not just saying hi, but getting to hang out with them. I hadn't done that before. And I think that one of the things that separate our two races, you're white, I'm black, back in those days and maybe even today, was fear. I don't know what you're like. You don't know what I'm like. If you don't get a chance to hang around me, how can you get over some of the misconceptions, the fear that you have of me? The same thing for me. How do I get over the misconceptions that I think about white people, you, him? But once you start intermingling, some of that fear goes away, you know. Well, you know, she's just like the black girls I know. And you probably know white guys that are just like me. And I think that's what that segregation did. And I think those people who are running the city at that time deserve high praise, because they decided to to split that up and send some white kids over to the black school. And you got to realize, 1966, busing was an issue. And they decided that what they were going to do was split that well-to-do upper-class area into two different schools. So, because when I grew up, I didn't know. I'd say hi to some white people, but I knew zero. I didn't know any of them. When I was growing up in that housing project, there's not one white kid that I would know what their dad did. Just didn't know. I mean, we were friendly enough, but we had no constant intermingling. So that's one of the things that I remember most about that Triangle District.
What was basketball like in the public housing? Was that also segregated?
Yes, absolutely. The white kids played on their playground, and we played on ours. Now, no rule is ironclad. There would be times when we had a tremendous athlete named Skip Mason. That's what I was trying to tell him. I've been fortunate. In high school, I played against guys who were really great, and we won 48 in a row, and I was just a little chip of that. I wasn't the guy. Never was. But Skip would go over there and play with the white kids. He was good looking. He was intelligent. He had such a great personality. But like I said, fear separates races sometimes. And most of us were scared to go over to the white side and play. Most of the white kids were scared to come over to the black playground and play. But as time went past and we start intermingling more, found out that everything that we were thinking, 90% of it wasn't true. I mean, it just wasn't.
And then going ahead a little, what was it like for you to go and play for a pro team, to go over to Germany as a West Virginia kid? Grew up in public housing. What was that like?
A lot of kids right now go to Germany, to France, to Italy. Well, it was a little scary for me because, first of all, I was disappointed I didn't get to make the NBA. And this was I don't know what you call it. This is something that I did because I couldn't do anything else. And in 1974, 75, I'm getting my dates mixed up, but people didn't speak English in Germany. They had a army base, and for the little time I was in Germany, my fun was going to the army base outside of Dusseldorf. Am I pronouncing that right? They had an army base outside it, the U.S. Army base. So I would go over there just to listen to some people speak English. But I can't say that I liked it. I mean, it was my last card, the last card I had to play to keep playing basketball.